I take pride and ownership in my guys, and I tell them on a continuous basis that, you know, defend your first in, right? What does that entail of defending your first in is being solid on your maps and being solid on your where your plugs are and being solid on your setbacks and being solid on your, right? All that training.
Firehouse Vigilance presents the Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency. Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. It is Weekly Scrap number 236. I am excited tonight. My guest is Dane Yaw, and I'm excited for this one. I consider most of my guest friends. I really do. I honestly do. But this one is a person I consider a very close friend. He has been serving in the fire service for over 24 years. He has been a training officer. He has been on USAR teams. He developed the K-9 training program for OK Task Force 1. He and his partner Salsa took second place in the Iron Dog competition. If there is a technician you can be in the rescue industry, he has it. From ropes to swift water and everything in between, he's been a driver. He's been a company officer. He has put in work in the training division. Currently, he is a major in the OKC Fire Department. This is just the cliff notes of this man's life. They call him Decoupage Dane, and we're going to lead off and talk about a little bit of that. My brother, Dane Yaw, welcome back to The Scrap for episode 236.
Well, thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to be on The Scrap again. So thanks for having me back on.
Dude, I'm excited. I really am excited. Everybody, please let me know if you can hear and see everything that is going on, because tonight we are operating. I mean, Sam's in the background, but in the very background, because he, you know, we're trying to fix the internet issues that we've been having, and that's part of the issue. Is I'm kind of rocking solo, doing everything that Sam normally does, and I can't say enough how much Sam does because of everything. Okay, Facebook's looking good, loud and clear. Good. Hey, please keep me posted. Please keep me posted if there's issues. Kyle Romagus is in the background, looking at your questions. Ready to grab them, so please, please, please have them ready. Instagram, I think, is up and running, but I can't monitor it. So, yeah, we're just going to roll with it like Instagram is running in the background. So, everything being said, we're going to rock on. Dane, is there anything I missed in the intro? What would you like to add?
No, that was perfect. A little more than I... It was great.
All right, I like it. I like it. Is the levels good? Please let me know. Let me know, chat. Yeah, Sam is the man. There is no Dane is the man. Sam is the man. Kyle is the man. We'll keep that going. Where else do I want to do? Okay, I got that. Got that. Pulling up my notes. Let me get to the parts that are important. Anything I missed? I got that. Get your questions ready for Dane, Kyle, myself. We are ready for you. Let's talk about those beautiful sponsors. The OG sponsor of The Scrap, Kehoes. Check them out online at kehoes.com. Follow them on Facebook. Of course. See if anybody's saying anything important. Just making sure. Okay. People are texting me, so I'm making sure they're not saying, hey, it's not working. Affordable Drill Towers. On a mission to bring you cost-effective, versatile training props. With more than 60 drill towers installed, the Affordable Drill Tower comes in several configurations and comes standard with a standpipe system. Choose from one or two sets of stairs, place it against your Connex boxes for multi-story access, or freestanding on a slab. All models are NFPA 1402 compliant and gain you ISO credit. The only thing that you can't do on an Affordable Drill Tower is live fire training. Pump and roll using the affordable standpipe prop. You can roll your affordable standpipe prop into the classroom for standpipe theory, and then you roll it into the parking lot and pump realistic flows and pressures. It comes with up to 7 standpipe valves that can be upgraded to PRVs. The affordable bailout prop allows you to practice window bailouts, ladder high point rescues, only 5 feet wide by 7 feet long. The affordable bailout prop can roll under any 12-foot overhead door, so you can train on the apparatus floor or in the parking lot. Call Steve, 844-55-TOWER, or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. Last but definitely not least, FireStationFurniture.com provides a complete line of quality furniture for your firehouse. Firefighter owned and operated, they understand the strain that firefighters put on furniture and offer furniture that's built to last. Visit www.firestationfurniture.com for more information. And of course, I always love Flame Decon. Wash your balls. Keep the cancer at bay. All right. That being said, the sponsors are done. We're ready to talk about stuff. Talk to me, Dave.
It is always sage advice to wash your balls.
Get them washed, man. Hey, balls and lady parts. I don't care what we're talking about. Get them washed. Get the cancer gone. Get the decontaminants out of there. And Flame is on a mission to make sure that happens. And I mean that with the bottom of my heart, man. I love their stuff. So, yeah.
I washed in them this morning. So, there you go.
Very adamant about that. All right. And that's the start. Yeah. That's the start of the scrap today.
Go. All right.
All right. Well, let's get right to it, because I want to talk about building tradition and pride in the firehouse. That is where I want to kick it off. Like, whether you're a one station apartment, you know, in the middle of nowhere near you, or you're an urban department with everybody around you, what's your keys to building tradition and esprit de corps in the fire department?
Well, it's you're exactly right. It doesn't matter whether you're at a single company house in Godibo, Oklahoma, or at a 1,000-man department. You know, or larger, it all starts in the firehouse, you know, and that's where you start building your pride and ownership, your esprit de corps. And it's very easy. It's, you know, I was thinking about it today, actually. I actually went to a funeral of a good friend that I used to work with back in the PD days. And that it got me thinking about, you know, seeing all these former coworkers that I hadn't seen in a couple of decades, brought back all the memories. And sure. Back then, in my fledgling career with the police department, our captain at the time, Kim Moore, actually, I'm not sure if he knowingly set up the traditions and the pride and ownership, or whether it was just an organic thing that happened. But he instilled within the crews that were working, the seriousness nature of the work we were doing, but then also built everybody up into these massive egos that came with training and being disciplined and having pride in the work you do. That, you know, every day you come into work, you know, somebody's life is going to lay on the line. And instilling that, and that you were the right guy for the job,
right?
And, so it was. I think that was the start of you know, a 20-something year old knucklehead mouth breather working around a bunch of men doing a serious job. You know, you walk the, and it's not fake it till you make it, but you walk the walk long enough that you develop that culture that they had developed in the police department, and they had a reputation that you know, that we were top notch. Right. And I think that can start at the firehouse just as easy. And it has been just as easy as doing those small little modifications with your training, developing a sense of identity that you're unique in the not only in the fire service itself, but within, and there's several different layers, you know, there's pride and ownership with the department that you work with. But, you know, I'm not naive in saying that every department has that stellar reputation or right. The admin and all that type of stuff. But then you can shrink that down into your station level. And with the department I work with, Oklahoma City Fire Department, it was started several years ago. Taking kind of the New York model of this fire station, developing that identity of the fire station. And I'll bring up Station 8, which is our special operations station at the time. We did dive, swift water, and confined space rope. We did all the technical rescue, was there. And then we had our hazmat. And those two stations simultaneously, the special operations stations, hazmat and the rescue, developed logos that they put. And at the time, it wasn't allowed on the fire trucks, but we developed a logo for our station. There was the River City Gang. It had nothing to do with the fire station itself or the guys that were in it, but it was the historical reference. And that's what was cool about it is the River City Gang was a gang that hung out on the river. And if we think back during Oklahoma times, when they were running cattle up through Kansas, they would stop on the river before they got into Indian territory. So this was in Indian territory, and this was not. And the River City Gang would run up and down the river, the Oklahoma River, and rob people.
Russell cows.
And so, yeah. And so, yeah, we have the logo was a big bull. And, you know, it had the barbed wire Maltese cross around it, and with dive and rescue and all the factors that were laid into it. So it was a really cool time. And then it was the running joke that we were making amends for for the gang is doing good now instead of doing bad. And that was kind of the start of it. Then that led to kind of theming out the station with different things. Then that led to individual station shirts, you know, and the department at the time was like, hey, this is, so we didn't put a OKC logo on it. We didn't put OKC Fire. We just had the River City Gang logo on that. And that developed that pride and ownership. And Hazmat did the same thing. They right. did theirs. They developed their logos. They did all that type of stuff. They started developing that uniqueness that we're part of Oklahoma City Fire Department, but we're Hazmat 5 or we're Rescue 8, you know. And so that became that separation of that we were unique, and that developed that internal pride. And the officers we had at it at the time were really forward thinking about it. And they were like, you're more trained than every other firefighter. You're more skilled than every other firefighter. They know it. You know it. But always come in and show up when you show up on the scene, because we always showed up when things were bad. And so they always instilled on us that to be humble in your craft. And I think that goes a long way. When you're a master of your craft, be humble, because if you come off, you know, as arrogant. And big egocentric, you're just going to push people off. Sure. And instead, coming in into these scenes with a, hey, how can we help? How can we do all this type stuff? Made people want to come to that station. We never had to, we always had volunteers that wanted to come and be part of that specialness. And then that expanded to Station 7, Station 1, the big house, and everybody started doing it. And then we got the right people in administration that were actually at 8s at the time when we started all of that. We asked them if we could put the logo on our engine and our heavy rescue. And they said, yeah, if you guys pay for it. So, and you know, the first two stations, Hazmat put their logos on, and then, Station 8 put the, River City Gang. We went to a graphics department, paid the money, and they put it on the fire trucks.
Made it right.
And then now they order the fire trucks with the emblems of whatever station, you know, whatever maybe the Western Outpost or, you know, the Hilltop Gang, you know,
right.
Hilltoppers, you know, so everybody. And now it's, I think out of the 38 fire stations we have, I would imagine probably 30 of them have their own pride and
some sort of identity.
Their own identity.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I transferred all that pride and ownership when I became the training center coordinator, and the marching orders that our deputy chief, Chief Walker, at the time said, you know, hey, I want to revamp. We're starting fresh. We're bringing in a whole new cadre. I want this to be the showpiece and the crown jewel of our department. And you know, to his credit, he was looking, not, you know, I was looking in the first 6 months, 6 and 12 months.
Right.
He was looking at 5 years, and he kind of hit some stuff home, and he goes, we're going to change the department, you know, and this will kind of harken back to Scott Thompson's book and what he preaches. And he always says that what his model will work for is for smaller departments.
Right.
I think he says like something like, in his book, you know, sub 500. But that I would like to add a caveat to that. You can have massive cultural changes within your department, in pride and ownership and traditions and all that from a seminal event. But with us, we had radical changes, even though we're a large department, because the guys in the corner office saw the retirement numbers, right, and they were projecting, you know, and which we are, you know, 5 years later, half our department has half of our employees. So 500 firefighters have less than 5 years on the job.
Right.
It's and crazy. All of those were in that crazy little time period. Right. Of, and so Chief Walker saw the writing on the wall that if we're going to make cultural changes in changing how we do fire tactics and how we train and the end product of firefighters that we push out, we're going to change the entire department in a 5 year span.
Right.
You know, not the, a generation.
The training becomes so important. The first impact. Yeah.
And not just the training, but everything that we did in training is we were molding the next generation, which was going to be the majority, right, you know, of the department in a very short time frame. So with those marching orders of, you know, nothing was a sacred cow. So we looked at every process that how they did training. There was a group of guys, and that's the cool deal is if you have a bunch of like-minded individuals, it doesn't matter the size of your department. The changes that we did within the department was like five guys.
That's the power, man. That's the power of doers. That's the power of doers, man. I want to get to that, but yes.
Yeah. And on paper, you look at all these individual people, if you took their resumes and threw them down, you'd be like, "This, there's no way in hell this is going to work." You know, we had computer nerds and we had hardcore rescue guys. And we had hardcore engine guys. And, you know, usually those egos don't mesh well and everybody wants to push an agenda. But so anyway, it was me and Justin Lorenzen and Court Smith, Wiley Gephardt, Paul Davis,
yes,
Wes Sitton, and a couple others.
Right.
That we sat around.
I know it's hard to name names, but
No, I'm going to leave. You know, Bobby Mercer, Shorty, and Summers. There was a ton of people that came in during that 5 year period, but they all bought into the bill of goods that we initially started. That initial cadre of people that spent I don't know, 3 or 4 days doing whiskey flights at Henry Hudson's and drawing out our marching orders on, you know, nothing was on off the table, and, you know, taking notes on bar napkins and then implementing all that stuff. And so we had some Wiley was a ex-marine, well, I think he was Army, some Navy, so we had previous experience and it was brought up early on that, you know, when a colonel came into a, you know, tanks around and moved everything around, and they kind of made that base by changing some things, you know, changing the look of things,
right,
into that tradition and that pride and ownership. So when we went in, we painted the drill towers, painted all the doors red, started decoupaging, if you would. We started adding, you know, expect fire, expect victims, and adding all these little subliminal decorations to the training center that was, you know, subliminally adding pride and ownership. You know, the previous training staff had painted on the middle, which was beautiful, in the middle of the bunk room at the training center, the logo, and nobody was allowed to step on the logo. So they were going in the right direction, and then we just took the mantle and amped it up. And that's usually how things go is, you know, you build on the blocks that came in, you know, you know, just like Station 8, where we came up with that logo, and then it just mushroomed. And one guy was like, "Hey, we're going to change the day off board." And they changed the day off board and made a table for the kitchen table, because we had three different tables. You know, it's a big city. So, you know, none of them, all of them wobbled and all that type of stuff. So
right.
We had a shoring class, and so we're doing a structural collapse, and we just took all the leftover lumber. We just disassembled everything, cut it up, and made a kitchen table and T-spot shores and were the legs. And, you know, it's just engraved everything and poured epoxy over the top of it. And, you know, and that was just, you know, and then another guy.
Is that truly where you got the nickname Decoupage Dane?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's an easy model to every station that I've been in. You know, you can you can go into every station that I've worked at. I haven't worked at a ton. I've been fortunate enough to only work at like five stations my whole career. They all of them have been, except for now, have been in downtown, so 601's district. But you can go in there and go, yeah, you know, he did that, or he did that, or he did that. And so taking that model and, you know, Bricktown's Bravest was Six's little moniker. We changed the logo, added it in, put it on the side of the truck, and it started. But then with that, it's just not the decoupage. It's the attitude that comes with it.
Right.
And pushing, you know, the training. And there's a lot of, you know, psyops, if you would, on your guys. And, you know, building them up and investing worth in them and their pride and ownership. And then,
well, yeah, because they don't buy in. It's all pointless. It's all paper mache.
Yeah, it's a house of cards.
Right.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of heavy lifting with the officers that are involved to push the agenda and get it. But once that ball's rolling, just like at training, we start throwing in and taking different ideas. And that's what the beauty of when you're developing and pride and ownership is that once people get buy-in, then they start running with it. And there's several things that happened. Lightning in a bottle phase that, you know, I get credit for, which I could honestly tell you who came up. I may have followed it through completion, but I can't tell you that was my idea. This was my idea, you know. Painting the drill ground was not my idea. That was Wiley's, you know. And so, and all this stuff, we got to aim the, you know, the somebody went to a USAR training in West Virginia, had this big, massive plaque at their training center, and it said, these things happen, you know, tsunamis, earthquakes, tornadoes, death, mayhem, all that type of stuff. So, you know, buyer beware when you enter this training ground. This is what we train on, type of deal. And they took a picture of it. They thought it was really cool, and so we brought it back and added a similar, you know, just took a great idea over here and added it to ours. We didn't have any lettering or anything. We just named the training ground, and then that, you know, we named it the Forge. We came up with a logo for the training center itself, which was the anvil and the Maltese cross and the one standard on the anvil. And that was kind of quartz add to it. I was not hip with it. And that maybe is the biggest takeaway, is people can come up with an idea and it may not be what you think is the ultimate idea. I wanted to go with the Spartan helmet, to be honest.
Right.
And which would have been totally lame. Not that, well, you have a Spartan helmet.
I have a Spartan helmet. Thanks, Dane. Thanks.
No,
appreciate
it. So now it would have been like, oh, you got that from Corley. And it was like, no. But he came up with the anvil, which I thought was kind of bland, to be honest.
Right, right. No, I'm with you. It's the different people's personalities playing out. Yeah, I'm trying to pull up some pictures right now so I can share them. But go ahead, keep talking.
So he then explained, it was like, all right, well, what's the story with the anvil? And he said, well, the anvil is a blacksmith uses the anvil. That's their office, their desk, and they forge everything, and they take raw material, they heat it up, and they bang it into a working tool. And after he said that, I'm like, man, that is a powerful emblem of the training, because that's what we do. We take these raw material, these civilians that want to be firefighters, heat them up, bang them, and forge them into a working tool known as a firefighter. And I was like, man, that is perfect. You know, once he explained it, and then J-Lo had the one standard, we're going to, you know, that was his deal, is when we, I think it is. And so if I'm getting the names and the people wrong, I apologize. But the one standard is that we're going to teach one way of throwing ladders. We're going to teach one way of handling hose. We're going to teach one way of throwing, of rescuing and searching. And so we're going to give them the building blocks, and it's going to be one standard across the board.
Right on.
There's not going to be any deviations. And so that's where the one standard came into play. And then the links that we had of that were made up around the logo.
I'm trying right now, Dane, while you're talking, I'm trying right now to share the pictures So everybody bear with me, but I'm sharing the pictures of you building the chain links around the emblem. And man, I want to be very clear to everybody, because J-Lo's in here, and the first time I met, and I was like, who did all this? And J-Lo pointed and said, that guy right there, his name's Danyaw. And so he will give credit to a lot of people, and he does, and rightfully so, because there was a lot of people involved, and he's a humble dude, but I will say that they pointed him and say he's the reason it happened. So anyway, keep on going and explain. I'm showing pictures of you putting the chain up.
Explain
the chain.
So the chain is how we do training. Court came up with really the training model that we had, Court and J-Lo and Wes, as far as, and it's based off of the talent code and how to train professional athletes. You know, and we're, you know, often referred to as industrial athletes. And so, you know, you learn the ladder. And then you, once you learn the ladder, that's your first link. The next one is you pull that ladder in and out, and you get comfortable with that next link. So it's like 15 steps to throwing a ladder.
Right.
Throwing it on your high shoulder, finding the midpoint, you know, doing all that type of stuff. And you just incrementally add links to this chain. So at the end of the deal, when you have all these links tied together, you're doing a second floor VES, you know. And at the same time, we were training. So our academy is not... We trained on this function, and then we trained on this function. We trained on this function. We trained on all the core elements at the same time. So that took a lot of pre-planning to make sure that nobody got ahead. And there was a lot of late nights after the day was over of training recruits to make sure that everybody was staying at the same path.
Right.
So that at the end of academy, everything's tied in together. In the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, we're training on adding the ladder links into the hose handling links. And so now we have a coordinated fire attack with VES because search is added into the ladder work.
I'm going to draw you in and say, explain the links and the relation to the recruits that come into this fire department, because they're looking at the pictures of the links wrapping
the
around.
Logo.
You put the logo and the links wrapping and the links going up and down. And they're
up
looking at that right now. Yeah. And so I want you to explain go ahead. Because it's powerful.
So we had the logo, and the logo came first. And that's what I was alluding to earlier, is that everything's a building block, and somebody comes up with an idea, and it adds to it, and then it's this snowball effect of great ideas. And so we had the links, because that's how we trained. And that was the sole end of that. And then our logistics guy called and said, hey, we're decommissioning all the chains off of all our rescue units. Do you guys want them? We were like, yeah, sure. I way underestimated how much he was talking about. Pallets of 55-gallon barrel drums full of, you know, heavy chain. And I was like, crap, what are we going to do with all that?
Right.
And then somebody added in that these links are not only how we train, but the links are the people. And so And this will go back to, how do you develop tradition?
Right.
And you just do it, right? You start, you come up with an idea of what that tradition is going to look like, and then you just keep running it and repeating it. And so we had all this decommissioned chain. We're trying to figure out what to do with it. They brought it in, and the idea was hatched that we're going to give each recruit, the first day of academy, they show up a link. And told them, you know, this link is a symbol of you as a firefighter. You look like everybody else. You look like when you're walking around town in your recruit uniform, nobody knows doesn't know that you're a recruit. They think you're an Oklahoma City firefighter.
Right.
But one link by itself does no work, right? It's a keychain,
right,
or a paperweight, right? It can't do anything. So here's your chain. You look like us, but this is a symbolic reminder that you are always representing the Oklahoma City Fire Department. And when somebody washed out, we would cut their link and throw it down on the floor of the podium in our main training auditorium. And so there's a sea of broken links. And so every time somebody, we made a special point of, you know, hey, if you noticed one of your brothers is not here anymore, they rang the bell, that link is wake. We don't want it added into our chain, right? And so, and we also front loaded that, you know, we wanted to add I'm going to kind of backtrack. We wanted to add in, because like I said, we had several Marines that were on the training staff and they had Hell Week or Hell Night. And so we wanted to emulate that. Court and J-Lo did a version of that like in 2015, and how they pulled it off with just the two of them, because they didn't have really the blessing or the, I shouldn't say the blessing. They didn't have any.
Right. Like massive support from the organization. They kind of just did it on their own.
Right. And so they did what we do now during EODCM or extended training day, which is a 24-hour day of training where we do mock fires, live burns, and car fires, and 82s. And it started off very not small. It was actually fairly large, but it has grown into this massive thing where we have volunteers. You know, the field personnel come in, they take days off. Yes. So that they can come and you guys
invited us down to be a part of it from a neighboring suburb. Yeah, we've been a part of it.
Yeah, and that was awesome, and I would love to have you guys back out again. It's because especially now that we have automatic aid with you guys, you know, it's great to have hands-on training with your guys, with our guys. We threw your guys into the mix.
And I want to explain, I'm not trying to cut you off, Dane, I'm not, but just to explain to everybody, it's a 24-hour training thing where all the recruits come in. It's the culmination of all their training for the year. And it takes place over 24 hours, and they come in and they cook breakfast, they report to duty, they get assigned to rigs, they go and do mundane inspections, they go and check hydrants, they make calls, they do everything in between, and it's 24 hours, and it culminates in the night into they respond to a fire alarm that turns into like a three-alarm fire where pretty much everybody's responding. There's a mayday, you know, insert whatever you guys curveballs you want to throw at them. It's not just the recruits. The recruits man the rigs, but now the volunteers are coming, and they are driving the rigs. You know, people who want to be drivers eventually are coming down and volunteering to drive the rigs. People who want to ride out are coming down to command the incident. You know, it's a powerful, powerful thing. I got pictures I want to share with everybody while I talk about it here. Because this
go ahead. And it was just one of those traditions that we didn't understand. It didn't intentionally know the ramifications, but we initially pulled in guys that we knew where they were solid and was regardless of rank, and brought them in. And now we're purposely putting, you know, guys that are gone through AOA, that are on deck for studying for driver. They're in the driver's position. So these recruits, this is the first time the recruits have actually been around field personnel.
Right.
So guys that are lieutenants that are on the captain's list or studying for captain are put in that captain's role. And it was kind of a really unique deal is that the recruits were stressed out because they were working around real firemen.
Right.
And the real firemen were stressed out because they didn't want to look like asshats in front of the recruits. And so everybody, and then of course what happens, everybody's out of their prefrontal cortex into their midbrain because they're stressed out and they make mistakes. And it's a learning curve for everybody. And the big learning curve for the officers or the guys that are acting up is they're used to being told, hey, fire tech, this, you know, and then they make those decisions. They're not used to being a micromanager and having these recruits and say, hey, I need you to pull the number one cross lay, pull it up to the alpha side door.
Right.
I need you to grab irons. And so it made them become more of a thinking officer and giving them skill sets. And then not only that, they're having to command these large fires they were having. So it was really cool. They wear their radios. Never know when a call's going to drop.
That's the strategic and tactical spin out of it. And that's amazing. The reps you get there. That's amazing. What I'm going to talk about right now in this next couple minutes is I'm going to share the pictures of my son going through it, right? And the fact that he got that chain at the beginning of the recruit class, you know what I'm saying? That's what he was given. And he looks at this chain on the wall, and then he goes through EODCM. And the thing is, at the tail end of that, you know, that 24-hour shift, everybody lines up, and they then get to go in front of that anvil, which sits in that classroom the entire time, right?
Yeah.
And you get to come in there after you pass through Eudesium, and you get to come in there and you get to go and put that chain link in that bucket, you know, and pay for your passage. And the chief of the department is there to greet you. And it's just an amazing, amazing experience that all ties back to that whole. And here's the thing is it's you developed that how many years ago? 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah. About 5 years ago.
I'm just throwing a number, but that's all he knows forever.
Yeah.
That's his vision of the OKC Fire Department forever.
And that's the biggest con job of traditions. Everybody can go back to the traditions within the fire department, you know, all the weird things that people do, you know, the Santa Muerte candles that you light every morning and the,
you know,
we at Oklahoma City has this weird tradition for breakfast. You always have, it doesn't matter what you're eating. You have to have ranch style beans and rice. And why that is, I don't know. But and most of the time you end up throwing that out.
Right.
Right. But if you don't cook it, people will bitch. Where's the ranch style beans and rice? Well, you didn't eat it last time. Hey, jackass, what's about tradition? And the best I'll tell the story on it. And I don't know if it's true or not, but it fits the narrative of that was started way back in the day as an homage back to the original 16 firefighters that were volunteers that became paid and got paid 50 cents a day.
Gotcha.
And that's all they could afford to eat. And so we've got it fat and happy, and it doesn't matter if we're having filet mignon, but we're going to eat ranch style beans and pay it back to the, like an homage to the links that came before you.
Right on.
And so going back to the links, so we give the recruits, and I'm gonna add in the whole elements for just probably brevity. So what we do is, but this was all this slow incremental changes over.
Right.
We did one. Now the next one, how can we make it better? How can we make it better? How can we make it better? And then it just added all this in. So the all around recruit who is voted in by their peers, and it's a prestigious honor for the recruit academy. The recruits themselves vote which person within their academy depicts their class the best. It's most likely not the smartest guy. It's not the most physically fit guy. And we've been shocked and surprised every time on who they pick. I mean, Chelsea Dillon was one of them, voted all around. She's a buck 10, maybe wet, just a workhorse. I'd have her work for me in a heartbeat. It's just a stud. And they picked her as the all around. And so the all around comes in the first day, and the all around from the previous class comes in and talks to the recruits the first day. Or it's actually the third day, but and they give them this speech, you know, that this is your link, this is what it represents, blah, 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 blah. And then someday somebody's going to ask you for your link. And so they carry it around with them and have it with them in anticipation that that they're going to be asked for it, which they get asked for it at the end of Eudesium. And they give them the whole story behind the chain of, you know, these red chains here represent the 16 volunteers. Then that's the start of the chain. The next link is the next academy that started in 1890. The guys, and it's fairly accurate. We have some gaps in historical data.
Record keeping, right.
Record keeping, you know, I mean, because it goes back to 1889. So we kind of did some fuzzy math and anticipate, you know, by number of people leaving, blah, blah, blah. Right. So it's fairly accurate. And then so each section of that link that goes all the way around is the academies that came in. And they have a little stamp medallion on them that has the year that there were. So if we had a multiple class, it'd be 22-1. And then the next set of chains would be 22-2 or 21-2, you know. So everybody has their individual marker. And I didn't understand the big picture of that and how powerful that was until much later, because I just thought it was a cool symbolism.
Right.
And they say, and they tell them that right now you have this individual link, and one day when you pass academy, you're going to press your links in there. But know that when your links as a class is pressed into this historical chain, you're pulling all the honor and sacrifice and tradition that the people before you. So it's not an easy pull, but you have 4,000 people pulling this 3-ton chain. So, everybody that's pulling in the right direction, you can do great work. And so we added in there, we added some special ones. We added the kind of Sentinel Hallmark deals, the first set of African-Americans that were hired in back in the 1950s. And I can't imagine how their workload went during that time. And then the first female firefighter, the first African-American female firefighter. And then we have white links, which is the only links that are actually identified as an individual person. They have their own tag, is line of duty deaths.
Right.
And so they're put in there with their initials. Excuse me. And so at the end, like I said, at the end of Eudicium, or the trial, is it's Latin for trial. We had this little ceremony, and the first ceremony we did, it was just us and I think it was just us. I may be getting this wrong, but it was just the training staff. We put the anvil down there, we lined them up, and I gave them a little speech, and then we had them come up.
Right.
I might be able to muddle through it. Let me see if I can remember. It's been a hot minute since I've done it. It was something along the lines of this. In Greek mythology, when a person goes from the civilian world, passes away, they go to the river Styx, and that's that kind of limbo area. And they have to pay passage across the river Styx before they can go to Hades or happiness, right? We don't know which we're going to do, right? Kind of like the pearly gates. But you still have to pass the river Styx. And for with that, you got to pay the ferryman your coinage to get across the river Styx. And that's why they buried people with coins on their eyes, coins right? So they could bury the ferryman, right?
Right.
And if they didn't have the coins to pay the ferryman, they stayed in that area in limbo. They couldn't go forward or couldn't go back, right? And so now you have been weighed and measured and found worthy to move forward in your path. And much like these civilians that are crossing the river Styx, you're going to have to pay the ferryman because you need to go a passage from your civilian world to Hades. Your office is fire and brimstone, right, and work, right? But first you have to pay that ferryman. And so it was much better rehearsed than
right,
that.
Right, right,
basically the gist, right? And so they would come up, they would all line up in front of the drill tower. We had the anvil down there on this pedestal and a sledge. There's kind of a cool story with how we came across the anvil. But and they would come up, they would drop the coin or their link into a bucket, and then they would symbolically hammer their link on the anvil. And then they would go by and say, you know, and then this training staff lined up on one side and they would shake hands with everybody and they'd say, welcome to the Oklahoma City Fire Department.
Right on.
You know, and that was, we kind of told them that, you know, this is your graduation. You're going to do the fire department graduation for your family, but this is for you and us that right. You've been weighed and measured. And so we did that the first year. The next Eudicium was the battalion chief of operations asked, and it was very interesting because this has happened multiple times. They're like, they asked. It was not like, hey, I'm going to show up. The battalion chief at the time, Chief Smiley, he's a deputy now. He was like, would you guys mind if I attend? And so at the time we would do it on the weekend. So we come in on Saturday because we had the drill field, the maintenance shop, right, everything, right. Everybody was closed and we could run with our hair on fire and do a bunch of crazy things, which, you know, plausible deniability on the corner office. You know, there were several phone calls of like, hey, we just got a report of a semi fire near you guys. Did you guys light a semi on fire? And it was like, no, we didn't light a semi on fire, but the car behind it. So from the highway, it looks like the semi's on fire. So we had, you know, it.
Yes, but no.
We tried to make it. Yes, but no. So yeah, we tried to make everything as realistic,
right,
as humanly possible. And so Smiley asked if he could come down, and so we just added him into the mix. And then so I gave my spiel, and then he added in a little bit of his spiel. And then the next time, the fire chief, the deputy chief of operations, asked when Eudicium was coming up. He was like, "Hey, can we come down? We'd like to. And these guys showed up on a Sunday morning at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
Right. Dressed right. out in uniform, cold as crap.
Right.
You know,
right.
And jumped in. And now it's the command staff. The command staff comes down. And so the training center coordinator gives his spiel. They add in all theirs. And it's kind of cool because Chief Kelly, our fire chief, actually minted coins just for that.
That's amazing.
That ceremony. And so when they drop their coin in, he gives them a handshake and says, welcome to the Oklahoma City Fire Department, you know, my brother or sister. And he's palming a challenge coin with them. So now these recruits. And so back to your.
No, it goes to my son. My son, that's all he, like, it might have been Chief Kelly's first time there. But that's all he knows. The chief shows up when that happens. Yeah. This is what happens every time. That's all he knows. And that changes the future of the tradition forever.
And exactly.
Anyway, I got pictures I'm showing. Let me get me back in here. But I got pictures I've been showing. I've been kind of scrolling through them, including one of me, you, and Jack at his graduation, the family graduation. We're all in our Class A's looking good. But other than that, I will hide this this window and get back in here. So, but no, it's amazing, dude. It's amazing. And the thing is that is not as powerful as that is. It's only like 5 years old.
Yeah. And, you know, and that you're exactly right. And that's what I was kind of talking about is the peek behind the curtain on tradition is everybody assumes tradition. This tradition has been gone through the dawn of time. And it's not. A tradition is a sentinel point that started here. You know, every tradition started somewhere at some point, and then they just kept doing it and refining it and doing whatever. And so, yeah, so the first time we handed out links, those cats, all they knew was this is cool.
I'm going to try and read some. Me and you have been talking, and I've been neglecting the audience. So I'm going to try and read some of the stuff coming in here. There's a question in there, and I'll get to the question, Jim. Jim, it's a great question. I want to get to it. Cameron Cooper said, glad to have a link in that chain. Love you, Cam. Love the fact that you're part of it. Taryn Rooney said, I have been a part of every ETD since my own recruit year in 2020 and still get chills every time during the ceremony. The tradition this training staff started is still alive and thriving in the department. Thank you, Major Yaw, for leading with influence one standard. With some raised hands. So get some raised hands up.
Raised hands.
There you go. That's a good looking logo. It's awesome to be part of Knight as a volunteer helper. I've done it and it's really, really neat. That's Smith Megan checking in. I got more questions coming. We're going to get to questions. I promise we'll get to questions. I'm just trying to catch Dane up on Scott Thompson. Man, there's some good names in here. I wanted to read some of them. Man, I've already lost too many. Okay, I'm going to try and catch up. I'm going to get to questions. Are you ready for the questions from the audience?
Sure.
Scott Hope Jr. wants to know, what is your key to identifying the types of traditions you want to build?
Man, that's a
good one.
I think if the success that I've had with developing traditions within our own department is making it unique to that individual and building up that uniqueness within an individual. So if you take those layers of pride and ownership at the top level as a blanket over the entire department, and then drilling it down from the entire department's honor and tradition to your station level's honor and tradition, and then at the station level, it's shift by shift. Each shift has its own unique pulse and rhythm and vibe, but they have that common, like right now I'm at station 31, which is the doghouse. Everybody's, you know, a dog at the doghouse across all three shifts, but it's uniquely different, and that everybody adds in their own spice to it. So to go back to the question, make it meaningful, have a little bit of thought with it, but the majority of the things that we've done in Oklahoma City have been kind of organic,
right?
And then after it's done, then the thought is added into it and to spice it up, if that makes any more. So if you go back to Station 8, the logo was just a cool idea, and we wanted to separate ourselves out. and be, you know, kind of like FDNY, all the individual stations with their own identity.
Yeah.
And so creating that individual identity and then bolstering that up with your own shift traditions, your own, building your guys up and fostering that. It's because if not, it's just a big poster on the wall, you know, or it's a slogan on a door.
Yeah, it's poster board.
But if you don't harken back to those things, you know, like expect fire and expect victims, or, you know, the hoses that we had in there, you know, do your job, be all in and all that type of stuff. Some of the things that we did, you know, sprinkled around the training center, is that needs to then, once you interject a little decoupage in there, you need to have some thought process and how to integrate that into conversations about leadership and conversations about responsibility and conversation, you know, responsibility to your crew.
Right.
Responsibilities to the citizens, responsibility to that. And then that opens the door for, you know, everybody expects doctors and rocket scientists to show up on the thing. And the best way to build pride and ownership is to really hammer home of, are you the guy that you want when your family calls 911, do you want your station to show up? Mm. Right? And if not, then you need to make cultural changes, right? Or you need to call out the station that's showing up to your house if they're not up to par. Does that make sense?
Oh yeah, it makes sense. I think it resonates, you know, with everybody listening to the scrap, because I think it's a driving mantra for most everybody here, but no, absolutely. Yeah,
kill them with competence, you know, or competency is that you, when I take pride and ownership in my guys and I tell them on a continuous basis that, you know, defend your first in, right? Nobody's going to stretch the line.
I love that.
End, right. You know, and what does that entail of defending your first in is being solid on your maps and being solid on your, where your plugs are and being solid on your setbacks and being solid on your, right. All that training that you go in, you know, and work in those scenarios on the, you know, we're like everybody else. We run 80% of our calls, maybe 80 plus are EMS calls, but man, what a perfect dry run on an EMS call to go, you know, the majority of our, my first in district is either heavy industrial, Section 8 apartments, and then scattering of houses. Mm-hmm. And so there's always these teaching moments of, you know, you run a medical call in there, you know, we do the check the smoke detectors and all that type of stuff. But then it's like, hey, we catch a fire here. What's our closest plug? You know, are we going to have to do a courtyard stretch? Or are we going to have to stretch fire? You know, this right. apartment that we were just in, right? You know, how are we going to force the door? What tools do you need to force that door? And, you know, is it a formidable door? Is it not? You know, and there's all these talking moments that you can add into just a routine medical call, further pushes back on that honor and pride of being a professional firefighter, you know, and I take out the paid part.
Right.
Whether you're a volunteer or
right, it's no, absolutely.
Whether you're
it's a
paid,
mindset. It's a mindset.
You're a professional firefighter, and if people expect you to be professional firefighters, and you don't have to be professional all the time. I mean, we've got, you know, flip flop. Well, it's not flip flop. Everybody has Crocs, but you know, fun day Sunday. You know, where the Xbox comes out, and we're in between calls. The guys are playing Fortnite or Call of Duty, and it was just a blow off. Relax. Hey, you can be unprofessional there, but once that rig rolls out the threshold of that station, mm-hmm. you're a professional firefighter.
Right on.
And the guys switch, right? And so there's a fun aspect and a serious aspect of developing that pride and ownership. I'm not sure I answered the question, but
I think you absolutely crushed the question, especially when you said defend your first due. I think that was the timestamp of the night. I loved it. Instagram's coming at you. Firefighter Greg White wants to know, what cigar is that?
This one is a CAO, Connecticut.
Okay.
With a torpedo tip.
I know nothing about cigars, so everything you said was Greek to me, but I'll believe you.
Well, Sabrina, my wife, Sabrina, I had a rough shift, And she said, I said, I'm heading home. I'm going to stop by the cigar shop because I don't have any cigars. She's like, don't worry about it. It's a mile from here. I'll go in. And what she did, unfortunately, was took all of my labels. So each cigar has a little label on them.
Right.
And so she took all the labels. Well, the labels I saved were all my high dollar cigars. I didn't even want to know how much she spent, but she brought probably a dozen cigars, and I bet you.
So you had saved one. Labels.
Yeah, I saved labels like, oh, someday when I'm rich and famous, I'll buy another one of these.
And she took those and said, hey, get me some of these for my man.
And she went to the cigar shop with all these labels and said, I want these.
Because my man's coming home. He's had a rough day.
Yeah. So, I don't know, probably $400 later.
So, is this one of those?
Huh? Yeah, this is one of them. So.
Okay, fair enough, man. I absolutely love it. She takes care of it, man.
It's a Dominican.
Sabrina is a one of a kind, man. One in a million. I love it. Yeah. I love it. We got, how do you get a strict our way or no way administration to buy into creating the culture? Have lots of jakes that try to build it up, but continuously get shut down by admin.
Well,
that's coming from Noah Holt. Great question, Noah. And there's no soft tosses. Right, no. I'm sorry, Dane.
No, it's... You know, it's. I'm not going to lie. It's a hard lift,
right.
But we kind of ran into that when we first went down at Station 8. We went down this rabbit hole of developing these traditions and pride and ownership. Is, you know, we took baby steps. It was, you know, we talked all three shifts and we were like, hey, we want to do this. We want to make this big thing and talk to the graphics. We, you know, luckily we have a graphics department and he was all in. He did the research and he came up with the River City Gang deal, right. And then we added everything into it. But that was just adding artwork to the, you know, that was just dressing up the station and admin didn't care. And then they kind of balked at the station shirts. So we had to eat. Some station shirts because we had OKCFD on the shirts, their station shirts, and we got a hard
no
nut kick on that one. So the next generation shirts, and they pushed back a little bit on it, but it was like, hey boss, this is just a shirt. It doesn't say anything on it. This could be a Firehouse Vigilance shirt.
Right.
It doesn't say anything. It doesn't identify us as an Oklahoma City firefighter. And they really didn't have a dog in the fight then. And now it's really cool is it was a slow process. I mean, this was back in like 2007, 2008. And now how we fast forward, you know, 14 years or so of now we have Oklahoma City Fire Department Class B uniform with our logo.
Nice.
So we have a doghouse logo. It says Oklahoma City Fire on the back, and that's our Class B. That's approved. And the only caveat with that is if I change stations, I have 90 days I think it's 30 days. 30 days to get
it. But it started.
Yeah.
Wait,
it started with yes. a picture on the wall that then started the station shirts, then started the ask of can we put the logo on the rig? That was kind of a weird ask, but we... and there was some pushback even from a receptive audience is like, well, we don't have budgeted money. I can't go to city council and say, hey, this. So
right.
Everybody passed the hat, collected money and said, well, if we pay for it, can we do it? And it was like, well, shit. Okay. As long as it's tasteful. So now all the logos that when we build a new station or somebody wants to get on the train, they have to submit a logo to admin, and it has to be approved. They've shot some down.
Sure.
You know, the Zoo Crew, which was Station 18, and Brian Arnold can remember that little battle. They actually made shirts and everything. It was really cool with the gorilla pulling out the bars because they're right next to their fire station was the zoo. We're fairly close.
That's where Jack's at. Yeah.
So. So they had to modify that because somebody thought, you know, somebody would get their panties in a wad.
Sure.
Somebody escaping from bars. And, you know, and so they had to change the Zoo Crew around a little bit. But that's the give and take between admin and us running amok with our hair on fire. You know, we do have to have some adult supervision or you're going to have, you know, something that's not socially acceptable to be put out there. But it was that those slow incremental steps of, you know, take the Rob Fisher deal, 100% pressure, 10% of the, or 10% pressure, 100% of the time, you know, and with theming out and doing all your pride and ownership, it's baby steps, and it's not going to happen all at once. But if you if you throw it out there, but fire, and it doesn't matter whether it's Oklahoma City Fire Department, Moore Fire Department, or whatever, is God, I lost my train of thought there. Man, it's
Esprit de Corps. The cost of Esprit de Corps, the value of Esprit de Corps. I'm trying to tie you back in. I can't remember the original question.
Right, and it doesn't matter. There's always going to be. It doesn't matter what department you work for. We, as a fire department, as a career, we self limit. Right, you hear it all the time. Hey, I want to. Let's go with something mundane like nozzles.
Okay.
Right. So I, you know, Brand X over here is I saw a demo on that. They're really cool, right? And then somebody will say they'll never go for it, right? And that idea will get shot down. We self limit very, very bad. And I'll take a good example. When I first came to the training center, the projector in our main auditorium was janky. It was about the size of a Volkswagen. And it was horrible. It was temperamental. It come in, come out, all that type of stuff. And I was like, man, we need to get a new one. Well, I was a training officer at the time. I was the training center. The training center coordinator said, they'll never buy a new one. They're 80 grand. Right. They're not going to do it. And so I was like, well, shit. And so I left it at that. And I kind of stewed on it for couple weeks, and that's that self-limiting deal. Is we already assume that the answer is going to be no,
right?
And so then I contacted a bunch of sound audio people, got bids, did the back channel RFPs, and presented to the fire chief. And he's like, we've been needing to replace that forever. Wrote a check for it, you know. And it was just the ask, right. And so we self-limit that. You know, admin's not going to be on board with us doing station shirts. If you put them in the loop and go, hey, we're going to do station shirts, or we want to change the decor in the fire station, just give them negate the pushback. You already anticipate what the pushback is this is the, but if you have them buy in and going, hey, this is the logo we're going to do.
No, it's
you
beautiful.
That this is what we're going to do. It makes it very hard for them to say no, especially when you're like, hey, we're paying for it out of our pocket. It's not going to have the city's logo on it. It's not going to reference the city. Right. Are you cool with that? Right. And then that's that baby step into the next thing of going, hey, can we put it on the rig?
And 10 years later,
it's a thing. And now they pay for it. You know?
Right. No. And one of my pet peeves is what I call worst case scenario decision-making. Right. And I hate it. They like, hey, we want to do this. Well, what's the worst thing that could happen? That could be really bad. We're not going to do what you asked, right?
Right.
Because the worst case scenario. Well, when you make all your decisions based off the worst case scenario, then it's the same as the worst case scenario actually occurring, right?
Right. And it's not going to happen if you don't ask, right?
Right. And I never realized it until just now talking to you in this scrap is that we do the same thing by saying they'll never say yes. We're creating the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And we never ask. We never get past that. Instead of
they're never going to give us a tiller, or they're never going to give us a mid mount.
Insert whatever. They will never go for that. So we never ask. Mm-hmm. Whereas the case may be that maybe we won't get it, but you didn't ask.
Yeah, I'll butcher it, but it's what is it? Wayne Gretzky's a shot not taken is a shot missed, right?
Yeah,
take the shot.
Yeah,
hell, you may make it in the goal, and then you're moving forward. So.
Love it. I absolutely love it. Yeah, we'll butcher quotes all day long. This is a scrap. That's what we do.
Hell, it may not have been Wayne Gretzky. It could have been someone else.
It is now. It's Winston Churchill or Wayne Gretzky. That's all there is to it.
As far as you know.
Right. Scott Hope Jr. wants to know, how do you approach the overcoming of favoritism and the good old boy system to facilitate pride and tradition development? I don't know the specifics of that question, but I'll throw it to you anyway.
Well, Nothing like softballs, right?
Right.
Can you put one on the tee?
Every time.
I would say, all right, so if you want to take, you know, your a page out of a leadership book, your change agents, right? Identify who your change agents are. And so if you do have favoritism within the department, which every department has, and it's a roadblock, get into the hip pocket of the favorite and get them to be your change agent. You know, covey up them, because if you jump the yard of that favoritism, you know it's going to get shot down. And then you take that change agent and plant those seeds and make it their idea, and then you're off to the races again.
And I like to say, always, you can be right or you can be effective. And make no mistake when I say this, don't mistake doing the right thing for being right. But a lot of times you can be right in a good old boy system, but be completely ineffective, or you can just be effective. And again, don't always do the right thing. I'm not saying compromise your principles or anything like that, but
right.
if you're in a system and the rules are in place and you don't get to affect the rules, play by the rules. Beat the system until the system changes. And it will if you do it right. But be effective.
Well, absolutely. And you do you. Yes. You know? And
well to a point to where you're cutting off your nose to spite your face, because some people will do you. They will be themselves to the point where they are completely ineffective. But, yes, I know what you're saying.
But if you push, you know, I knew that the chain was a big deal.
Right.
When I was break for lunch, I came out of my office. I was heading out for lunch, and somebody was in Classroom A, which is our main auditorium, and the lights were on. So I went in and just popped my head in to make sure that everything was cool. And there was a guy there with his family, and he was talking about the chain and pointing out where he was. He went alphabetical out of his class, and he was like, that's my link and all that type of stuff. And what was, you know, which that's happened several times. It's kind of interesting. But what was cool about it is it was one of those guys, you know, a malcontent, burnout, pain in the ass to everybody. You wouldn't want him on your shift. You wouldn't want him at your station. He was that guy. And every department has those guys. I mean, we've got 1,000 guys. So, you know, odds are we got several of those guys, but he, even then that broke through that, you know, he may hate his job, but he sure did love that chain and the pride and ownership enough to bring his freaking family that was visiting up to show him.
This is my link.
This is me, yeah. You know?
Oh, and awesome.
So, you know, that's,
break
through. Yeah, this.
No, that's powerful. So, dude, I'm telling you. Outsider looking in, being able to experience it, A, before my son was even involved, and B, after. I mean, I'm very, very proud. Jim Platt, coming at you, one of my favorite people. He said, was there a specific event, or was this just a brainstorm around the kitchen table that started this tradition? Specifically, I'm thinking he's talking about the train and the anvil, but...
Like I said, that was, we had marching orders, and they were very vague. Change what we're doing. What we're doing is not effective.
Okay.
Change what you're doing. Release the demons. Check with, you know, run with your hair on fire. But we still had a checks and balance. Everything that we did still had to go through admin.
Right.
Even the
it wasn't
the
carte blanche. It wasn't a blanche.
No, yeah, we didn't have carte blanche. We had carte blanche to come up with whatever we wanted. Now implementing whatever we wanted was a different story. And some of the things that we came up with, we didn't come to fruition. But a vast majority of what we came up with did. So that to get back to the question, hopefully I can answer it, is. That was a concerted effort between a bunch of like-minded vigilantes, if you would, that were coming down and had marching orders to make change. And what does that look like? And so we went through systematically looking at how training was done prior to us. And really, what the guys were doing before us were stellar guys. I mean, and they came up with great ideas. And that's the beauty of everything is it's I can't really own what we did in those 5 years because it was built on what the guys were doing before, you know, the processes that they were putting in. We just made it better. And that's what you hope is that when you come into a station, yes. You mold everything, you make it better. And when you leave, the lights are still going to kick on. And hopefully you've given those building blocks, which those guys had gave us a solid foundation. I mean, the training staff before us spent ungodly amount of man hours building burn boxes. And they set us up with a bunch of tools. We just made them fancy.
Right.
And gave concepts behind it. And
well, even tonight, asking my wife for pictures to show for my son's, you know, EDCM and his recruit academy, she was like, "Well, do you want this picture of their, you know, their class shadow box and their motto and their T-shirt and everything, you know, that existed?" And it's hanging on the walls throughout there for years and years and years.
Yeah, and that was a tradition that was started
right
way back.
And that's what you got to build.
They would do with plaques. Yeah.
Right.
And so there was still pride and ownership. Let's just say I didn't reinvent the wheel
right.
at all. I just made it fancy, you know, and I pimped the wheels, you know. We added some
you pimped that
20s
right.
and yeah, lowered all the front right. end a little bit, put an air scoop on it. It was still, you know.
No, there was so much there, man. There's so much there. It's yeah. awesome, man. And that
was started why they started that. You know, that originally, if you go back, and so those that are not familiar with the Oklahoma City Training Grounds, there's one wall that has every class picture and who was involved in the training and all that. And that goes back to like 1970. And about that time is when they did they made a special plaque for the all around, the most athletic, the highest score on education, you know, the smart guy, the physically fit guy, the all around. That was all the original plaque. And then the next one, they came up with a name for their class and they was added onto it. And then they did just, you know, and then
they had a motto.
It's that same concept of just having what you have. And if you don't have it, make it. But if you do have something, add onto it.
Right. And whatever you make, someone coming after you will add on to it. But you have to make something, and it takes doers.
Yeah. Just yeah. doing it.
Yeah. I love it. Okay. We're getting to books. I want to hear book or books, man. What should firefighters be reading? I always love this question. It's my favorite question I ask.
Well, if you're into training your guys... I use this book quite a bit. We used it, and I alluded to it, the way we modified how we train recruits was based on, I think it was Klein, the talent code.
Talent
code. Now, and it's, you know, it's a book.
Coyle.
And so Coyle. Yes. Thank yes. you. Darren Coyle. So, but he has a Cliff Note version, which is called the Little Book of Talent. So you could, it's like the Cliff Note versions of, and basically having intent on your training and all that. If you want to motivate your guys and set in deep training scars,
right.
positive training scars, not negative training scars, but setting solid foundations that when the panic monkey takes over, and you drop back out of your rational brain and you're functioning on your monkey brain, that you go into that automatic pilot, and that automatic pilot is that training that you have instilled. And so as an officer or as a firefighter, and it's very interesting because there's a lot of psychology based on that book on how to train not only other people but yourself. And I used it more as a self introspect on how I learn and how I train and do all that, and adding stories to that to seed it into a deeper long-term memory bank, for lack of a better word. So the Little Book of Talent is a good one. Leadership, the best book. I'm not a prolific reader. I read a lot, but not not a ton. So I cut corners. You know, I've read the oodles of leadership books, tons of them, you know, Vicuzzo's and the, you know, Maxwell's, and just a ton of leadership books trying to figure out my leadership style and how to polish it up. And my wife actually gave me, and I don't know how she came across it and who put her on it, but she bought me, and it's like $8 on Amazon. It's 52 pages. It's called The Sticky Note Leader.
Yeah, Sticky
and
Note
it
Leader. You've referenced this so many times to me, and I still haven't read it.
Yeah, I'll buy your book, and I'll send it. Because, all right, we'll take. So as a trade for this, this is a shameless plug, just in time for St. Patrick's
Day. Hell yeah.
Day.
You got a green shirt?
There you go.
Kill him with confidence, baby.
Kill him with confidence. I'll buy you that book. It is the one leadership book that I reference on the regular. And to the point of I have the it's got these little icons as a memory deal on a post-it note sitting on my dry erase board in my office.
No, I need it. I need it without a doubt.
And it's just. All this, you know, and the lady that wrote it, she's like, I just took all the good stuff that made sense to me out of all these leadership books and put it into a Cliff Note deal. And so it's solid, how to develop your guys, how to build them up, how to filter crap down from, up high. So they only get the good water and not all the other crap that they don't need to. To worry about, drop barriers down to make sure that they're saying provide fuel for them to go forward, you know, lift them up, you know, and the big hallmark is, and everybody says it is when my guys are successful and knock stuff out of the park, that's my time to praise them publicly. And if they're there, when you publicly praise them for kicking ass and taking names, even better. But if they win, then it's their win. If they lose, then it's my loss, you know. And then I have, as an officer, need to now I've identified a, you know, those three U's that you can never remember.
Yeah.
Unwilling, unable, or unaware. Yeah. They may be, if they're unable, it's because or unaware, that's a training issue. Or that's a management issue that I need to address with them, so that I give them the skill sets and the tools
that obstacle.
For them to be successful, removing that obstacle. Right. So it's like I said, those are two that I use pretty regularly.
I love it. Anything that references the three U's, I absolutely love. And Sabrina chimed in, said Katie Cole, The Sticky Note Leadership. So there you go. She gave us the name of it. All right, that takes us to one of my favorite parts of this whole ordeal. The reason I do what I do. It is the five questions for firefighters. You've been exposed to them before. This is the 5Q3, and it's technically the 5Q3 version 3.3, I'm pretty sure. It's the 3.3. It's the third iteration of the questions over the history of the scrap. Okay. So, the questions have no right or wrong answer. It's completely your opinion. The points are arbitrary. They're assigned by me with the help of the studio audience. So all I have to know is, are you ready for the next five versions of questions for firefighters 3.5Q3 something?
Bring it.
Here we go.
I'm be careful what you wish for, right?
Number one, what is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
What is the skill?
And everybody, just so you know, I didn't send these to Dane beforehand because we're such good friends. I assumed he knew them all. So,
all right, and this is a skill that I am terrible at. And anybody that really knows me knows that I'm terrible at it. So they're going to be shocked that I'm going to push this out as a skill. There was a wise owl who lived in an oak. The more he saw, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. Why can't we all be like that wise old bird? That's not a skill, but the skill is situational awareness. Paying it, which I'm admittingly terrible at. I'm just now in developing my emotional intelligence. And I would say the best skill to have in the fire department is a high EQ, is paying attention and having the situational awareness and listening instead of formulating a question or your response to the question, listening to the question, listening to the environment and paying attention to the environment of your guys. Because if you're going balls to the wall and not paying attention, you're going to miss the guy that's over here that's having an issue, or you're missing a subtle comment that is made at shift change that then turns into this big blow up between, you know, some shift war because you were not listening and paying attention. You were just talking.
All right.
And running through. So I would say having situational awareness and being and that's really a kind of lame blanket statement, because you can add situational awareness on the fire ground and situational awareness at the station, situational awareness at home, you know, all of those things. But if you can master that of being, and like I said, it's a daily grind for me to not be narcissistic Dane, you know, and being more empathetic, paying attention to all the things and all the inputs that are coming in.
I would never use narcissistic to describe you, but I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying.
How about selfish? Yeah.
Okay. Now that's a little better. I would never take that. Brian Arnold said skill, .. stunning good looks and the ability to speak. So I think he's giving you a lot of credit.
I love BA. BA is awesome. He actually texted me a book, Turn the Ship Around, Sabrina just got through reading that one, actually. So,
is that Marquez's book?
That's another.
Abershaw's. It's Your Ship is Abershaw. Marquez. David Marquez. Absolutely.
Turn the Ship Around is the – I can't remember. It's basically the crux of that he was going to get this flagship top modern thing, and then – spent years studying every nut and bolt, and then he gets handed a turd, and then he has to spend his whole time going from station to station, which that is a great, great learning lesson for leaders in the fire service is
absolutely
paying attention, right? He empowered his guys to tell him and inform him and explain what their job is. What he was developing was pride and ownership of their station, their ship, but not only just that ship, but what they did on that ship.
Oh, absolutely.
And then this guy from high above had spent the time to do it. And it, which goes back to, you know, Chief Kelly coming in and Jack Scott's first and only Eudesium, that this guy, the pinnacle mean guy in the corner office that, oh my God, that's the man, you know, the goat over there, is taking time to lower himself and invest in my experience. And so, yeah, that's a great book.
100%. No matter what, you already got max points on number one. Easy max points. I wanted to say this because you said it in your answer, situational awareness. I wanted to bring up, and I didn't get to because we talked about so much tradition and morale building and esprit de corps, but your class at FDIC this year, situational awareness, man, 100%. Yeah. You're teaching at FDIC, and I want to get everybody a chance to come and see you.
Yeah, super pumped. If you guys are going to FDIC, I teach the last day. So hopefully everybody will be not hungover and enjoy the class. But it was lessons learned from my days at PD. You know, we were commissioned officers. We ran the ambulance service. Was run as a division within the police department. It was kind of a weird mix. But so we had patrol officers. There were paramedics, dual trained. I never was on a squad car. I went through police academy, kind of a modified version of things, and, you know, wore a police uniform, you know, it said Norman Police on the side of our ambulances and all that type of stuff. But that was, I didn't realize at the time, you know, the trainings are too radically different. You know, police, fire, and EMS, we all have that servant's heart. We all have the duty to act. Ingrained in us or we wouldn't do it, but their training is so radically different than what the training I got when I went to the fire service. And so my training in the PD days running ambulance calls was from the mind frame of a police officer. You know, grandma's going to have a a shank and she's going to stab you. Everybody lies. You know, it's just this paranoid. They develop, because it's a safety net, is that they right. always have to be hyper-vigilant because somebody is eventually going to do them harm, right? And so it's this I don't want to say paranoid, but this diligence.
It's aware. It's an awareness. It's an awareness.
And so their situational awareness class through the entire police academy was built around that kind of that core concept of you need to respond, but you need to respond in a manner that keeps you safe.
Right.
And when I went to the fire service, you know, went to the dark side and
the bright side.
The bright side. God, I wish I would have done it earlier. But anyway, it was radically different. You know, I came in the cusp of the Oklahoma City Fire Department when they were first starting the ALS program. And so they're like, hey, we're running these medical calls and you're going to be paramedics, which are like half doctors, and they're going to be slinging drugs and you're going to be carrying narcotics and all that. So just saddle up for that. And it was just, you know, and that was basically how it laid out. And so when I promoted to sergeant, part of my promotion was to be an EMS training officer. And so I was an EMS training officer for 2 years. And in that, we had a couple of close calls. And the chief of EMS at the time came to me and he said, can you put a program together to make our guys safer?
Right.
Nobody ever got hurt, but it were really, really close calls of where things went wrong, but just by the graces and the stars lining up, nobody was injured. And so, you know, and that was back in 2005. And so really aggression onto EMS was not a huge thing, but it was starting that you could see the trend moving that direction. And we were knee deep in, you know, first responding. So I took all the elements of that I learned in PD. You're fine.
I got to read you the chat, but go ahead.
And added it into fireman speak. And so just like sizing up for a structure fire, I teach them how to size it up for, you know, as you're driving along, as you're coming up, you know, you either stop before or you pull past, depending on your hose lays, right?
Right, right,
so do the same, right? So as you're driving by, pay attention to the windows. Do your size up, your window size up, just like you would on a fire on this medical call. Pay attention to which lights are on. That's going to tell you where people are harbored. Right. As you pull all the way past, you get almost a 360 of the structure. And now you're taking an uncommon approach. Right.
Right.
When PD goes out on a domestic or goes out on a nefarious call where their radar's up, they don't stop right in front of the house. They stop past and then they take unconventional approaches because they don't want to be bird dogged in. Right. And so you pull the fire truck. Right. Not only that, it leaves the space for the box to come in. And they can unload right there. They're not having to roll down the street or whatever because the big red truck's in front of it. And so just those little things. And then sizing up, paying attention to what the call is. Is that going to raise your threat level? And just it's expecting the unexpected on these calls. And it's easy. We've already self-regulated ourselves on stabbings and shootings and domestics and suicides where we stage, right? This the program I'm teaching at FDIC is all about the gray areas in between, right? And paying attention to your logbooks of, you know, when I was at AIDS, there were two rival gang members that, and we were in the middle of two rival gangs. So we knew if the green shift had a drive-by shooting, we were going to have a drive-by shooting over in this area, right? So if we had a man down, right? Man down's an ambiguous call, right? We're not going to stage, right? It's just so, but now I have the information because I have the situational awareness of the previous shift had a drive-by shooting over here. Now we have a man down over here in a known gang area. Should we slow roll, get more information, do all that? You know,
and I absolutely love everything, man. In fact, that was the first time we met was at the little dollhouse at OKC Fire when you ran one of my crews through your little situational awareness just for that. It was, when I say little, it was just for that house. And you talked about
it was a 15-minute
positioning on windows, thinking about approaching the house, things like that. And I was like, hey, can you come teach this class at my fire department? And you did. That was kind of where we met.
Yeah, that was
That was the initial.
That was the initial.
Just to go back in time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Then I met Sabrina, and I was like, oh, wow. Now I understand. Sabrina's amazing.
Now you understand why he's so smart. It's right. Because he married a smart person.
All right. Max points, 1 and 2. Easy max points. Number 3, and I have to finish the question. What is your favorite fire service tradition, excluding the firehouse kitchen table?
Time in the bay. We have the. I'm at a chief station, and so it's a 3-bay station. And we have space behind the chief's car, and when they replaced our furniture, we took the old broke down furniture, put it out there, and it's the smoke and joke time, and we call it the second best chief's office. More work is done, and more talks are done, and more impromptu organic diffusings and debriefings and damage control and happen behind the bay. And that is the coolest little tradition. Now, you know, the firefighters come out. They used to just like peek around and make sure we weren't talking chief stuff or all that type stuff.
Right.
And, you know, it's like, yeah, sure, come on in. And, you know, next thing you know, the entire station's around there and we're telling war stories and old stuff. So we've moved from the kitchen table, which still stuff happens there. But now we have the smoke and joke time. And I think that's my current cool tradition that we have at that fire station.
All right. I actually screwed up and skipped number 2, which is my favorite question, but it's because we were talking about your class. So that's my caveat. Number 2 question, my favorite question, and I want to hear your answer to, is it's job town. It's time. You are responding. You are en route. You got to think of the scene from Backdraft where Steven's trying to jump on the rig with his gear, but the guy slaps the tape in the tape deck. If you're old enough to remember tape decks. What song are you playing en route?
En route to a job. All right, so I'm gonna steal somebody else's
That's song.
Fair. And it's Children of the Sun.
I heard that earlier from you.
Billy Thorpe. Yeah, I was actually replaying it when we were doing the mic checks and all that. Right. And I was like, why is this playing on my Spotify? So, and it was explained to me that the first, God, if I can remember the words to it, but people of the earth stood waiting as the ships came in one by one. And an old officer of mine was a metalhead from back then, and really this is not a metal song at all, but you know, it's a little rocky. So, and he said he always imagined when we were responding to calls, the song was playing in the background, and he just, oh, I love this song, and he put this really cool spin on it of the ships were the rigs, people of the earth just standing. You know, when we're running up on a job, people are all standing around us and watching these ships come in one by one with the what was it? People of the Earth? I'm going to have to hum it. With the lights of 1,000 sunsets. So he was, you know, as they came in with the lights of 1,000 sunsets, the Children of the Sun, you know, we're the children of the, he goes, I always equated myself as a, he goes, I probably dropped too much acid back in the day, but you know, the Children of the Sun, you know, the sun's a big ball of fire and that's where we are. We are children of the fire, you know, and
I love
so,
it. I love
you know,
it.
It's a, you know, the, and it goes in there and gives a little line in there is about, they all stood listening as the voice, from the sky, you know, our sirens coming in and all that. He goes, I always thought that, you know, the Children of the Sun was a perfect song. And it actually fits really good because the intro is, it's like the song's like 6 minutes. And so the intro is like a minute and 40 something seconds before the song's actually starts.
Right. So
it just kind of ramps up into the, which is perfect. If you threw it in the old 8-track is that's when you're given, you know, you're looking at your NBC, you're getting all your stuff and you're getting your ducks in a row. And then the song starts. So you have time to kind of, this is where we're going, this is what we're doing, and then here we are, you know.
Children of the Sun.
Ships coming in one by one.
So. I love it. You got max points. Absolutely. 3 for 3. Number 4. This one is on the clock. No honorable mentions. No elaboration. You either come in under the time limit or you don't. But who are the four people you would place on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service? And go.
Do I have to give why? All right. Ben Franklin. He was the original, the OG.
OG.
Started the American Fire Service. Lloyd Lehman, little tiny drops of water, has created the longest standing argument between smoothbore and fog nozzles in the history of the fire service. So he would have to go up there. Alan Brunicini, maverick, visionary, love him or hate him, he made radical changes to the fire service. And so they're all dead. Let me give a Paul Combs.
Ooh.
Paul Combs, oh God, I got 20 seconds. No one in the fire service has ever addressed the amount of hot button issues in such an eloquent manner, and nobody set him on fire. You know, he's addressed all the dangers. So that would be my four.
Dude, I love it. I absolutely love it. The OG, Ben Franklin, Lloyd Lehman, the originator of the Riccio, Brunicini, be nice.
Be nice.
And I think that's Paul Combs' first Mount Rushmore appearance that I can think of. Anybody can correct me.
Was Paul Combs even a firefighter?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's well known for his artwork, but no.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but I don't. Was he ever actually a firefighter? No,
absolutely.
Was he? Okay.
Oh yeah.
And, I would love to have just a book of all his stuff.
Oh, brother, man, I'm actually going to text him as soon as we hang up and say, dude, you just made Dane Yaw's Mount Rushmore.
Well, I mean, he's addressed.
Oh, everything. Everything.
Everything.
Everything. No, if there has been a topic, he has drawn a cartoon about it.
Yeah. And it's such a prank that
Yeah, huge fan. Okay, yeah. Yes, I can't say enough good stuff. Where am I at?
Not afraid to throw anybody under the bus. And then people still even know that you get thrown under the bus, and there have been plenty of cartoons where I'm like, oh, I am that guy.
Yes. Still no, that's me. Oh, still God. Love it.
Yeah.
That's my chief. God. Oh, yeah. No, 100%. No, I love the OGs all the way from, dude, that's a great four. Easy, max points, 4 for 4. Here it is. Heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
Well, if you asked my 10-year and down self, I would say, God, handline all day long. Fight fire, right? But my older self is, we're in the saving lives business. And fire tech should support that saving lives. So VES, there's nothing better than doing our job, you know, risking a lot to save a lot. And a lot is somebody that can't rescue themselves.
Love it.
And so that's why we're here, you know, is to pull people out of the fire. You know, I've burned down plenty of structures to the ground. It doesn't matter hill of beans, but the people that you pull out, that's the ultimate feather in your cap.
Boom.
You know.
Boom. 5 for 5, back-to-back appearances, 108, 236, 5 for 5, absolutely max points. And that officially puts 236 scraps in the books. Dane Yaw, thank you for spending your evening with us. If someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do so?
You can drop me an email. My work email is dane.yaw@okc.gov. That's the easiest way of throwing me a line, and I'll try to answer any questions that you possibly have. I don't know a lot, but I know a lot of people. So if I don't have the answer, I can find somebody that absolutely does.
That's a club I belong to. I love that. Housekeeping, go to firehousevigilance.com. If you're not a vigilante, ask yourself, look in the mirror and ask yourself, why not? Vigilantes, they're amazing. Go join. $5 a month. You can sign up for a year. I'll be posting a link to the scrap after party. Dane doesn't know it yet, but he's coming to hang out and get his chops busted here shortly by all the vigilantes. And of course, they never actually bust chops. I'm just going to be real with you. I'm very proud of this V50. I talked about it at the beginning of the show. If you want to make a change in life, man, get get the V50. Become a part, man. It is a great way to build habits. All that being said, go become a vigilante. Go get your V50 commitment. Go get your green shirts for St. Patty's Day. Dane sported one tonight. Next week, it is. Yeah, there you go. And next week, it is Paul Capo. Show it off. What a stud.
There it is.
What a stud. Oop. There it is. There it is.
I'll be wearing it on the 17th, my friend.
Absolutely. Next week, it is Paul Capo, followed by RJ of Capital Fire Trading, and then the one and only Candace Ashby. It is shaping up to be a badass march, plain and simple, all the way across the board. You won't want to miss these episodes as we keep 2024 rolling. Thank you, Dane Yaw, for being such a phenomenal guest.
I appreciate it, and look forward to spending a little time with the vigilantes in the after party.
Getting roasted.
I got to hang with them at Pensacola when you had a meet and greet there.
That's where the song question actually was born.
Was it really in that meeting?
Yeah, that meeting was the song the birth of the song question, which is one of the best questions. I love that question. Vigilantes. Awesome. If you are going to be part of the Scrap After Party, Sam will be posting the link in the private group. Dane is going to get roasted, so be there, and please roast him. Okay? I'm saying that. I'm saying that from the bottom of my heart. Don't do the normal. Anyway, the Scrap would not exist without you being here, tuning in, and throwing your comments and your questions at us. I appreciate you all. Thank you for tuning in live. I love you. Remember, mutts don't scrap. I hope the tones stay silent unless it is burning. Everybody, stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.